Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you so much for joining me for another in-depth conversation. I always like to remind everyone that this show is really about empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And that's something that is so important these days. We need to get as aware, as educated, as informed, and then we find our own path. But without that knowledge, without that information, education, it's really hard to make informed decisions. So this is all about supporting you and being able to make the best decisions for yourself, your family, and your community. And if you are listening for the very first time, I absolutely welcome you to be part of this community. If you would like to get the archived shows, then you can just go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know. Like me there, and I post all of the archive shows for this podcast and also for the other podcasts I do every Saturday at 11 a.m. called The Love Code, which has more of a spiritual focus and a healing focus. So if you'd like to get both of those podcasts, either like me at What Women Must Know, but the other option is to go to my website, which is drcherylselman.com, and opt in there. And then all the shows will go right to your inbox. Of course, there's other great information I share as well, so you won't miss out. So having said all that, I am really looking forward to my guest today. We're going to be having a great conversation with Megan Smith, who is a prize-winning director of a new documentary called Boobs, The War on Women's Breasts. For those of you who have been listening to me for quite a while, we've had conversations in the past about what is happening for women's breast health, whether we are getting the right information regarding screening, assessment, what are the other options. These are important topics, very profound decisions women need to make. And I am very pleased to welcome Megan Smith to the show because she is really going to help us navigate through the breast screening world and help us to really make decisions on what's going to support us. A little bit about Megan before we jump into things. She holds an MS in biology with a thesis in molecular genetics and currently works on a documentary filmmaker and freelance investigative journalist in the areas of science and health. And in 2016, Megan founded Waymark Productions LLC, a company dedicated to bettering the lives of those with health afflictions. Megan wrote, produced, and directed her first short documentary, Boobs, The War on Women's Breasts, which garnered numerous film festival awards. Her feature film, by the same name, is now being distributed internationally by Los Angeles-based Cinema Libre Studio. Boobs looks into the controversial breast cancer screening test of mammography, but also considers a future protocol option for women, thermography, in conjunction with ultrasound. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Megan to the show today, and we have a really important topic for women. So Megan Smith, it's so great to have you. Thank you for joining us here on What Women Must Know.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
You know, this is such a deep and profound topic. It has confused women for so long about what we are doing in regards to our breast health. So I'm really looking forward to what you have been so dedicated. I just want to say congratulations to you, Megan, because to write, to produce, and direct a film is pretty astounding to me. So, I can't even imagine how much work it takes. I've talked to other filmmakers, and it's just such dedication to be able to bring something like this into being. So on behalf of all the women of the world, thank you.
Thank you for your
dedication to do that.
Let's
start by having you share, a little bit about you, but particularly what about your life made you so passionate to bring this kind of documentary into birth?
So my journey started about 12 years ago. My husband passed from lung cancer, and right on the heels of that, I lost three dear friends to breast cancer in the course of about 2 years, and said, you know, this, I just felt like I wanted to do something to help change the cancer world or contribute to, you know, somehow helping people. And I was already an investigative reporter, and I had this Master's of Science degree. I said, I don't know, I just all of a sudden I ran into a filmmaker, and I said, oh, documentary film, that would be a great way to get the word out. Excuse me. I was looking into alternative cancer therapies, and that's what I started to film on. I grabbed a cinematographer. We went all over the world, all over the U.S., Mexico, got a lot of footage. And then I'm sitting down the editing booth, and I'm halfway through editing the film on alternative cancer therapies, and I realized 10 minutes of my 90-minute film was on breast cancer screening. And obviously I was upset about it, and because I had no idea this was going on, what we're about to discuss. I said, you know, I'm going to make this into a short film. And so I made that into a 30-minute film. And then Cinema Libre out of L.A. picked it up to distribute. And they said, but we need it to be more like 60 to 90 minutes. And so I expanded it, and that's where we are now. And I have yet to get back to the original film, but hopefully I will at some point.
Well, you've got all that editing material waiting for you.
Yeah.
So what did you find to be the most controversial thing about the use of mammography for screening? And I think we need to make a distinction with mammography for screening, for general cancer screening, as opposed to a more in-depth diagnostic assessment, too.
Right. So for screening... So mammography is the primary breast cancer screening tool defined by basically insurance, Medicare. Everything else, MRI, ultrasound, thermography, those are adjuncts, and you have to get a mammogram first, and then you can get an adjunct after the mammogram. But the most controversial thing, I think, what really struck me was the amount of radiation in these things. I had no idea that we were being irradiated at the amount we were. I kind of tripped into this little fib that doctors are telling their patients, and I don't even think the doctors know that they're fibbing because they don't know better. They're getting given this soundbite, and that is, when you ask your doctor how much radiation is in one of these things, which I have asked my doctor, they'll say, well, it's the same as traveling, flying across the U.S. That's how much radiation you're getting from the mammogram machine. So I talked to a Columbia professor in radiation. He's a physicist or a specialist in radiation. He said, you know, I don't know why they use that. He said that they're talking about scattered radiation from the mammogram. That's not the absorbed dose going into the breast that's creating the cancer years later. That's what we need to be talking about. And I just had my aha moment and just went, what? So I started to get out the calculator, and I figured out we're getting up to like 20 times the amount that they're talking about when they're using this plain metaphor. I don't even think the radiologists know that this is going on. The radiologists read the report, they know how to run the machine, but they're not radiation experts. It's actually the radiation physicists who know about radiation, which was also a surprise to me. So I would have to say just the amount of radiation we're getting, and it also ties into dense breast tissue, which is there's two big issues I kind of see that go hand in hand with the mammogram machine. Dense breast tissue, of which 90% of us have some degree of dense breast tissue. And the other thing is the overdiagnosis of a beast called DCIS, ductal carcinoma in situ. So I didn't know if you wanted me to just keep going, or you could insert a question in there.
Well, you know, that's a lot right there to unpack.
Yeah.
The women, because, you know, Megan, I wrote a book called Hormone Heresy, What Women Must Know. Mm-hmm. I wrote it quite a few years ago, and it's been revised and updated. And it, I have a chapter on this because I was so upset about what's happening with this overreach of mammograms. And I'll just share some of the thoughts that you kind of brought up, and we can maybe explore them a bit more before we talk about the real safe and much more effective solutions with mammography and even ultrasound. So what concerned me was, first of all, the tremendous amount of radiation that women are getting. And, you know, radiation, and talking to some of the experts I've talked to, not only is the radiation a risk factor for inducing breast cancer down the track, but radiation could be so damaging because it creates this massive oxidative stress. It could be affecting lungs, lung mm-hmm. tissue. It could be affecting the heart. You know, this is radiation, right? This is causing serious damage on a DNA level. And that was one of the things that concerned me, especially when it's being recommended that women do it every, I guess, every 2 years. Right now, I'm not even up on mammograms because I don't do them. But, you know, on a regular basis, and then they were starting to encourage women, young women, to do mammograms. So mm-hmm. not menopausal women. It's women in either because breast cancer was now being diagnosed in younger women. Now they want these 30- and 40-year-old women to start getting mammograms with, as you said, dense breast tissue. So you can't get an accurate reading, and then you're exposing these young women to radiation ongoing at a time of their lives when they can really be vulnerable to this ongoing exposure to radiation. So I'd like some of your thoughts on that.
So it's, I mean, I think anything, and I think this is what the literature was pointing to, that's why they changed the guidelines of how often to get a mammogram. Anyone, you know, roughly speaking, anyone under 50 is premenopausal. That breast tissue is generally more dense the younger you are. And it's almost counterindicated to get a mammogram the younger you are, because when your dense breast tissue is composed of more epithelial cells, that's the most radiation sensitive cell work tissue in your body. So it has more chance of DNA damage, more chance of contracting cancer years later. And so for them to be pushing younger, especially the radiation associations, sometimes they're saying 30 years old, which is just ridiculous. They're asking for trouble. And then you get the cell physicists and physiologists screaming, saying, no, this is a really bad idea. This is radiation-sensitive material in their breasts. You know, dense breast tissue, and plus the mammogram is terrible with dense breast tissue. The denser it is, the more chance it is it's going to miss the cancer, because cancer on a mammogram machine or mammogram x-ray looks white, and dense breast tissue is white. So the radiologist has a problem differentiating between those two. And what the other problem with that, the denser your breasts are, the more the radiation tech is cranking up the radiation, I didn't know this either, to see through the dense breast tissue for the radiologist when they take the picture. They don't tell you that. You're standing there with your breast in a grip, and they're cranking up the radiation if they see that you have dense breast tissue that they can't see through. And to me, that's a very clear indication of lack of informed consent for the patient. That kind of stuff has just got to stop.
So in your research, what did you find that's defying logic, defying health, defying you know, the science that is saying that we shouldn't do this screening on women under the age of 50 with dense breast tissue? What did you uncover?
So it's kind of encapsulated with the in 2009. That's when they changed the breast cancer screening guidelines for how often women should get a mammogram. And it was really an interesting discussion. And I think I was confused by it, and I think everybody else was confused by it. But the argument was this big meta-analysis came out of the Nordic Cochrane Center that they actually looked at all of the, you know, different literature citations, and they found that actually as many women were getting harmed by the mammogram use as were being saved by the few that were catching it early enough to save, you know, you have to catch it really early to save the woman totally from cancer. And so they came out and said, we think that mammograms should be abolished, basically. There's no justification for use. And that got everybody around the world's attention. And everybody went into scrambling mode. And so the Radiology Association stuck to women should get their first mammogram at 40. They weren't going to budge. And they should get it every year. And then the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force said, no, we think women should start getting around 50 and should go every other year. It's a little bit, the schedule's a little bit more complicated, but I'm just kind of trying to, you know, make it easy. But, and then the American Cancer Society said, well, they hedged their bets and they said, start at 45, do it every other year, and then, you know, do it every year under these circumstances, and then stop doing it at about 75 or something like that. So everybody had different guidelines. But what they weren't saying is the reason these guidelines were changed was because of radiation-induced cancer in dense breast tissue and also this overdiagnosis of ductal carcinoma in situ, which is a precancer. It's a stage zero. It's not even a carcinoma, yet they call it a carcinoma, which scares women. And it turned out that women, it represents 20 to 25% of breast cancers. And I had never even heard of this until a friend of mine, I found out she'd had a double mastectomy from DCIS. And I was horrified. Wow. I said, stage zero? You're getting your breast taken off for stage zero? What, you know? So that became a large part of my film. And so women are being, they're scared. They hear carcinoma and they just say, take my breast off. And, you know, studying this for so long, I've kind of come to the conclusion that if they stopped doing mammography, a lot of the DCIS would probably not become invasive. You're radiating the tissue. It starts in that sensitive, radiation-sensitive tissue. And you're compressing the breast. And that can lead to trauma-induced cancer. Instead, I think those women should be, you know, they should say, okay, stop. You have some stuff that looks like it might be precancerous. Let's just run a thermogram on you every year, every 6 months or whatever, and see if it starts to explode with heat, you know. And that's, it would be a great way to just track DCIS instead of taking women's breasts off. It's terrible what's going on.
It's so sad. You know, I remember one time a woman contacted me and she said that, I think she was at the stage where she had a cancer diagnosis, but this is what really upset me. She said, 5 years ago, my doctor saw something suspicious. So for 5 years, he said, we will just follow it. We will follow it. And that's what they did. They followed it all the way into becoming, a real breast cancer issue. The point of that is that, you know, 5 years, when you have, you know, some sort of assessment, whether it's stage zero DCIS, there are so many strategies that you can implement. You don't just wait and look and carry on with life. Right? You have to get proactive because you can do all the healing required to make sure nothing ever develops. And if something is developing, you can reverse it. But you don't just sit around and wait and then get your mammograms every year to see if it's progressing. You know, this to me was horrifying, Megan, when I heard this story, because in the end she had to, you know, go into chemo, radiation, whatever she did, you know, surgery, to deal with something that could have taken another course entirely. So we're so uninformed, and we, you know, this is such a big message of yours and of mine. We cannot just go and accept these guidelines and accept these technologies without understanding just what they're doing to us. You know, they're not safe. They are not safe. Radiation is radiation is radiation, and it's not safe. Cumulative, the more you get, the more you're damaging tissue. And, you know, there's big money there, and I don't know whether that ever got investigated by you, but there is no doubt in my mind that there were huge financial incentives by all these companies to make sure mammograms are being pushed on as young a woman and as often as possible.
Absolutely. In fact, I found out that doctors, not I don't know how many doctors are getting this, but my guess is probably a pretty large number. If they write a prescription for a mammogram for you and you go and fill it and have the mammogram, a lot of them are getting kickbacks in the form of $100.
Well,
so
right.
You add that up, you know. And the insurance company said, well, that's because we're trying to prevent breast cancer. Well, by the time you catch something on a mammogram, it's already so large it's encapsulated. It's only stage 1B that's classified as non-invasive. Everything else, stage 1B up, is invasive. And they're going to do more probably than just a lumpectomy. So we need to catch it before it's encapsulated. We need to catch it when it's just inflammation in the breast. That's why I like thermography.
And we'll talk about that in a minute. But while we're talking about this, I just want to say to everyone listening, one of the most important things you can do to protect yourself against developing breast cancer, or if you have, you know, like this, you know, early stage, which means that it's contained within the ducts of the breast, the lymph ducts. It's not invasive. It's not moving around your body. It's not getting into your lymph system. It's just contained. That's what stage zero is, which is just something that potentially might be brewing. But take vitamin D, one of the most important vitamins you can take to reduce the risk of cancers, including breast cancer, is vitamin D. And my other favorite thing to be taking, and there's a long list of nutrition that can help us, is a form of broccoli seed extract. So broccoli seed extract actually is very effective in being able to support the detoxification of estrogens through the liver, so they become deactivated and sent out of the body rather than stimulating. So those are just two simple things that every woman could be doing. And by the way, men too, because prostate cancer is an estrogen-driven cancer, so might as well do that for men. And, you know, we can take action. We can be empowered, right? Not just wait around for our next mammogram.
Yeah, and when we start talking about thermograms, I'll tell you that I had a kind of a scary encounter with my thermogram, and I'll tell you what I did to reverse my situation. But going back to the money real quick, the money and mammograms, our system is now leading us down 3D mammograms. The old ones were called 2D, two-dimensional. The new ones are called 3D. Most people have heard about them by now. Well, I just want to let women know, if you do go for a mammogram, if you opt for that, if you go to a 3D facility, you need to ask them if they have the software, which couples 2D and 3D together. Otherwise, they're doing two separate sets of X-ray, and you're getting, right off the bat, you're getting twice the amount of radiation. And they don't tell women that. They don't tell women that. You have to ask them if they have the software, because a lot of these facilities don't have that software. I kind of tripped into that information, too. But I like to let women know that.
So if they don't have the software for the 3D, why is it increasing the radiation? Are they using a new type of technology that requires you to increase the dosage? I don't understand.
If they don't have the software, they have to take the old 2D pictures and the new 3D pictures. So they're taking two different pictures. And you won't even know it, I guess, because, you're just sitting there with your breast in a grip. But, otherwise they take them at the same time. So it's really important to ask them if they have the software. And they'll know exactly what you're talking about, because I did this to a facility and she knew right away, yes, we have it. Yeah,
oh, wow. That is horrifying to think that there are some places that are giving you double the dose of radiation.
A lot of them, apparently. A lot of facilities are. So, they don't tell you.
Wow. Wow, such important information. I'm so glad we're talking about this today. Where else can women get this kind of knowledge and research you've done, Meg? And it's, you know, it's even surprising to me. And I've looked into this. So let's move on. Let's talk about what it is that is an effective, safe screening technology that can really help women in terms of screening, you know. And the distinction is screening is just what is assessing what might be going on as opposed to wanting to have more diagnostic approach when something suspicious is found. So most women, when they go for their mammograms every year, it's just screening. That's, you know, they're just checking, make sure if there's anything brewing or not. But there is a really effective technology that can be used for screening rather than mammography on an annual basis or semi-annual basis. So let's talk about that.
Yes, and one thing to bring up and kind of just to segue into this, a lot of women think that mammograms are prevention. They prevent cancer, and that is not what's going on. They get mad at their doctors when they get a breast cancer, like, I've been doing my mammogram every year. No, they don't prevent cancer. But what we're about to talk to could be viewed as a preventative tool, and that is thermography, which is it's an infrared camera that is, it's non-invasive. You expose your breasts and some people acclimate your breasts to the temperature, and then about 10 minutes later or whatever, the thermographer will take pictures of your breasts in black and white and also color. And they'll be able to, you know, through the interpretation later, we'll be able to see if there's any kind of temperature differential between the two breasts. And if there's a rise in temperature somewhere, you have some inflammation probably going on, and, you know, they'll tell you that later. And I'll just go ahead and tell you my story now. So I went in when I was filming this. I didn't have anybody to lay down and to have a picture taken of their breasts. So I did the ultrasound first, and then I got up and did the thermogram. And when we got to the interpretation, the doctor said, well, actually, you've got a problem in your left breast. And I was like, what? And I had had an injury to that breast. And it was actually, I noticed that I get like a little twinge of pain every now and then. So that's what was showing up on the thermogram. And they said, we don't know if you have cancer or not, but here's what you do to reverse it. And he gave me some instructions about, you know, letting them bounce and don't wear an underwire bra and massage your breast to get the lymphatic congestion out of there. But then I also changed my diet. I lost 15 pounds. I'd been eating junk food on the road. I went to, you know, GMO, non-GMO foods. And I was also on three medications that kind of, it was like I started taking medications because I had a side effect from another medication. And I went, what is going on here? And so I went to a naturopathic doctor, and she said, we're going to put you on supplements. She didn't say take me off the medication. She just said, we're going to change this. And sure, just one at a time, I no longer needed those medications. So I went off of those. Now I take a lot of supplements. And a year later, I went back to get a thermogram. I had no idea what I was going to find. I did notice that my breast stopped hurting. And sure enough, the inflammation was gone, and they were equal temperature. So that's the kind of thing you can find out with the thermogram. And that was my shot across the bow, you know, warning signal. And thank goodness I found that, right? So that was just my quick little story.
But, you know, that's quite profound because, you know, something like thermography should be a tool, an assessment tool to help us get a better idea of what's going on in our body so then we can be proactive and make better choices or, you know, alter lifestyle and be able to optimize our health, right? We want to nip things in the bud. That's the whole point. It's not to find something and then go, well, now you have this path to go down. You know, you have to have biopsies and surgeries.
Right.
And, you know, what we want is to have a tool to help people, and in this case, mostly women, although men are getting breast cancer as well, I should say, that will help them take another direction in life. You know, it's a wake-up call, basically. It's a wake-up call because we can alter the destiny for our health. We can, like you did, that's a perfect example. It was a big wake-up call for you, Megan, right? You know, you weren't taking care of your body as you needed to. And you got that message and then chose to do whatever was required, basically, to optimize your health. And, of course, the breast issue would disappear because you were getting healthier.
It was a reflection. And breast cancer, as you know, is an inflammatory condition. Most chronic diseases are. So that's what the thermogram is picking up by the cameras. It's looking at inflammation and things like that. So it really is a test of prevention. It was studied back in the 1970s. They did a terrible job. It was put up against mammography. They told these radiologists to do thermograms on women, and they're like, I don't know how to run this thing. And so thermograms were quickly thrown out of this trial. It was a famous trial. But the soundbite that came out of that was that thermograms don't work. And that's not what happened at all. Thermograms weren't run correctly, and they were thrown out because nobody knew how to operate the cameras and interpret. So I'm also posing, I'd like to see a study done between mammograms run up against thermograms and ultrasound. It wouldn't cost that much money. It wouldn't take that much time. And this could be a game changer because both thermograms and ultrasound are already FDA approved. They're both adjuncts to mammograms. We just need to see if they would be as good, if not better, than mammograms, then we'd avoid radiation and invasiveness, and you might be able to pick up you'd have the thermogram, so hopefully pick up that inflammation before it becomes a tumor. That's what we want to do. We don't want to wait for it to become a tumor.
Exactly. You know, the reason why I love thermography, which is my preference for screening, is because it is a, first of all, non-invasive procedure, unlike mammograms where you're having to get your breast squished and then you're exposed to radiation. Thermography is a camera, like you said. It's just taking a picture of the heat differential in your body. So you're setting up a unique fingerprint, so to speak, of your heat patterns, and everyone is different. And then you have something to measure it against. You know, it doesn't pick up anything, and it doesn't diagnose. It's looking at heat patterns, and then they get assessed. And I'm not sure when you had yours done, Megan, whether the doctor was trained in doing it, but the place where I go, they actually, their camera is associated with a professional thermography center, and they send the film of your breast, and they do both sides, so you see a pattern, off to trained thermographers, I think the term is, which are doctors who are trained to read the patterns, not to diagnose, just to read patterns of potential going on. Is that what your experience was as well?
Yes, I had. I've been to two different centers. One in L.A. A woman named Dr. Galina Magalko. She's a medical doctor trained in Ukraine, who's been doing thermograms coupled with ultrasound. She was the one who turned me on to that idea, and she interprets because she's got that much experience. And the other center is run by a woman who's she's got the right equipment, knows what she's doing. And she sends it out for interpretation by someone who's been doing it for, 40 years or something. So that's what I was going to warn people. If you decide to go this route, you have to make sure they have good equipment, a good interpreter, and they have to make sure they know what they're doing, basically. And the easiest way, I tell people the easiest way, because I checked this with one of the doctors, and they said, just ask them how much they spent on their equipment. If they said $2,000, get the heck out of there, because a good camera has to have good software with it. Also, it's going to cost around between $20,000 and $30,000. So if they haven't spent that much money up front, they probably don't know what they're doing, and you're going to get less than accurate readings. And you're, you don't want to do that.
And I actually, my thermographer is in L.A., and I want to just give a recommendation to women if they're looking for a good thermographer or just want to get referred to one. If they go to thebreastthermographycenter.com, Dr. Hillary Smith is the practitioner there, and she is a trained, top-of-the-line practitioner. She's gone through lots of trainings. The Breast Thermography Center. com, and I know Dr. Hillary would help any woman get referred to a place, someone qualified in their, hopefully in their area, their part of the country. So the Breast Thermography Center. com is another resource. You know, the thing that thermography really offers, in addition to being able to see these heat patterns, is that it actually is able to assess patterns in other organs of the body, for instance, the thyroid. So thermography can look at a heat pattern, and if you have an underactive thyroid, which is a risk factor for breast cancer, which is why I want to mention it, then you can see that thyroid may be a blue color, which is cold because it's underactive, right? So that way it gives you more information as to what might be happening within your body that could be moving you down a path of disharmony and dysfunction and ultimately manifesting as some condition. So it becomes a very useful tool to, investigate what's happening with your body and pick up things that may not have been assessed or even discovered wouldn't be with mammograms at all. So I just want to say that because that's what I found. It was really useful to see something else that was brewing that I could then be proactive with.
There's actually one other thing I can pick up, and that is if there's something wrong with your teeth.
Right.
Dr. Migalko said that she told me the story that she all of a sudden had her breast thermogram went bad in one breast, and she looked up her neck, and the line went straight from one of the teeth all the way down into the breast. So she went into the biological dentist. They looked at her tooth. They said, this thing needs to be extracted. They pulled it, and her breast went back to normal temperature. So,
wow. That's so profound, right?
Probably done. Go ahead.
Well, you just reminded me because, yes, you're right. The teeth play a role. And there are teeth that, positions of teeth that actually are on the meridian that goes right through the breast.
So, right, I bet you've probably talked about this on your show before, but I think that whole thing is fascinating. I didn't know anything about the dentistry being connected to the rest of the body, but it really is.
Yes, it is. It's quite amazing when we understand that everything is connected to everything.
Yeah.
When it comes to our body, we have to, understand that we don't live in separate rooms, and our breasts are in a separate room than our thyroid, and, it's all connected, which is why, I'm so impressed, Megan, that on your journey that you shared with us, you really made the commitment to up the ante with your health, right? Because there was a lot that your body was asking you to take care of, and you did it. You made
that. I had no idea that's where I was going to end up going, but that's where, it was kind of like I said, well, I'll just jump on in front of the camera. And I was like, whoops, wait a minute, what?
What a blessing for you that you did.
Yeah, it was.
Right? You not only learned something profound, but you altered your health destiny, as I like to call it.
Mm-hmm.
You change the course of things. So let's talk about ultrasound, because where does that fall into this story?
So, Dr. Galina Migalko was the one who said, thermograms are great. They're just by themselves, they're wonderful tools. But you want to make sure, because that's a test of physiology, and it's the only test of its kind, versus tests of anatomy, which are mammogram, ultrasound, MRI, those pick up what actually looks like a tumor on, you know, on their scans. So she said she wanted to make sure, absolutely sure, she wasn't missing anything. So if you really want to be sure, you know, couple the thermogram up with a test of anatomy. She chose ultrasound because it doesn't have any radiation. It's easy to do. It's low cost. And so she'll do the ultrasound right there as soon, you know, the same appointment she does the thermogram. You can do them separately, but they should be done, you know, done fairly close together time-wise. But she was the one who planted that in my mind, and I thought, you know, that makes total sense. And actually, she and I went and talked to Otis Brawley, who was the chief medical director of the American Cancer Society, because he was saying, I don't, thermograms are a waste of time, when I interviewed him in 2016, I think it was. And I said, I'm going to come back to you. We're going to talk about that more. So I brought Dr. Galena in, and she did this presentation for him, and he went, oh, my gosh, I can see why this thing would be worthy of studying. And so I got his sign-off on, you know, being able to say that he supports that idea of a study of ultrasound and thermography together, which is a big deal. he no longer works at ACS, but I'm going to probably go talk to them at some point. So anyway, yeah. So
let me ask you this. I understand that you cannot get an ultrasound unless you first get a mammography.
Yeah, this is a mess. This is where insurance comes in. This needs to change. This would be an easy change, actually, especially because we have this beast of dense breast tissue. The mammogram for women in the upper two categories of heterogeneous density or extremely dense breasts, those women, the mammogram is going to miss a lot of cancers. In the upper category, it's like 50% of breast cancers are missed. Those women, the mammogram is almost a waste of time. They should go right to the ultrasound. Why are we messing around with the mammogram? Well, because insurance, Medicare, who is, you know, Medicare, all the private insurance companies all follow what Medicare does. So Medicare is the government, you know, insurance company. They set the rules, and somehow they set the rule that you have to get a mammogram first. It's the only primary breast cancer screening tool, and everything else is an adjunct. So you have to get a mammogram before you get an ultrasound. And women have absolute fits over this. And they try and convince their doctor, I don't want to get a mammogram. It's radiation. It hurts, blah, blah. It's a waste of time. And the doctors are like, I can't do anything about it. Well, if they're smart, I know some doctors that have been able to write around the DSM codes, as they're called, and figure out how to write a prescription just for an ultrasound. I don't know how they do it. I haven't figured that out. But generally speaking, you're stuck in this situation where you have to get a mammogram first. It's awful.
Well, it is awful. And, you know, that's the thing, the big... You know, corporations are aligned with the government and with a lot of the organizations that are promoting women's health, but they actually get a tremendous amount of money. I think GE owns the radiation equipment for
a lot of
mammography.
Them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's all one big happy family. And therefore, you know, it's women's health and what's efficacious is not really was the highest priority. The highest priority in making these decisions is about money. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women suffer as a result, which is why you're such an activist now, Megan.
Right.
You know, you become an activist. You might have stumbled into this whole subject, but you're now an activist on behalf of women because it is so terrifying to get a diagnosis of breast cancer. And I know you've done some interviews in your documentary. Maybe there's, you know, a story you want to share with us of someone that you felt, you know, an inspiring message.
Oh, the patients?
Yeah.
Yeah, boy, all of them are. Well, I told you about the one woman. She was a friend of mine that had a double mastectomy for DCIS. She now wishes she had not done that because she said the doctors were really putting pressure on her. We really think you should have your breast taken off. And she finally went, okay. And now she's looking at the literature that's starting to go, well, maybe we were rushing people into mastectomies and we need to come up with a different, you know. And then there was another woman, Carla, who had a stage 2 cancer until they started to biopsy it and then squish it with the mammogram, and that it spread like wildfire to stage 4. Bless her, she changed her lifestyle, you know, just upside down, and was juicing and everything, and she actually got all the tumors that were all over her organs everywhere to disappear. And the, except for the, you know, the primary tumor, which was just basically dead. And the doctors are like, what on earth are you doing? How did you do that? And, you know, that was just amazing. And unfortunately, she ran out of money for her treatments and the cancer came back and she ended up passing away. And I was so sorry because she was just a wonderful person. Another woman in my film, Nancy, she's also a friend. She said, Megan, oh my God, I've got cancer in my breast. I can feel it. It's a hard marble. And I felt it and I was like, oh wow. It feels just like a marble sewed under the skin, you know? And she said, I'm gonna go get it looked at, but they're saying they think it's cancer. And she said, I don't want to have treatments. And so we were planning a road trip to Mexico and they got in there and they said, well, the pathologist thinks it's not cancer, but the breast surgeon said, I think it's cancer. I think you need to have it out. So I would recommend, he called it a partial mastectomy. I don't know if that just means a large lumpectomy or something. But she had part of her breast removed. And then afterwards they met in his office because he said, I think it's cancer because I looked at the pathology and I think it was cancer. Well, they went and met in his office after and he said, oops, it wasn't cancer after all. So that's another thing I learned is pathology is subjective. It's totally up to the pathologist what they think is cancer. Somebody else may not. So if you've been diagnosed with cancer through a biopsy, take the slides and literally go to a different pathologist and have them look at it, because I didn't know. I thought pathology was 100%, you know, one way or the other, and it's not. So that's why you need to get two or three opinions.
So this thing that he called a partial mastectomy, which I don't think there's any such thing, you know, obviously created, you know, a deformity in her breast then. I mean, you know, you don't just have a chunk of your breast taken off and it, you know, is covered up and looks normal again, right?
Right. Never. Nancy's very stoic. She just said, I don't care. I'm glad I didn't have cancer. She just went on her life.
Yeah. Yeah, which is good for her. Yeah, she has that fortitude. But
exactly.
But for women, it can be devastating, right, to have that deformity of the breast.
Yeah.
So then it may need, you know, plastic surgery or whatever, however women deal with it. But it's not a minor thing, and I've never heard of a partial mastectomy, you know.
No,
But the point is that it wasn't properly diagnosed. And there are tests. You probably know them. They're tests that can be, a doctor can run that can see if you have markers for cancer in your body, which would be a really good idea rather than just rely on a slut. Obviously, it's not accurate enough, you know. One of the important points that we have talked about already, Megan, but I think it's really important to bring it up. If someone has something suspicious brewing, it's a wake-up call, right? It's not, you know, it's not just about, you know, getting a lumpectomy. It's not about just getting radiation, which, you know, women go, well, it's just radiation. It doesn't hurt. Really, radiation is damaging, so damaging to your tissues, right? It may not hurt. You may get some burn, but it is damaging to your tissues. So it's affecting your organs. You know, it's not benign. But it's a wake-up call, and there are effective modalities, strategies, practitioners that could help people address what is being compromised in your body physically and emotionally and mentally as well as spiritually, because the healing journey means you need to address everything. If you're dealing with some unresolved trauma, sexual trauma, abuse trauma, it will cause a disturbance in your energy field that will show up as a problem as well. So it's a big story for women. You know,
stress
it's not a shortcut.
No,
yeah,
stress can do terrible things. It was described to me, stress creates cortisol problems, escalates, and then all of the hormones as a cascade effect through your whole body, all these hormones are just go haywire, and then things start, like cancer or chronic disease can take over really more readily. I had interviewed Tony Jimenez out of Tijuana, excuse me.
Yeah.
And he's an amazing healer, medical doctor. And he said, Megan, I haven't had, he's at Hope for Cancer. That's actually where I was going to take Nancy. And actually, that's probably where I would go if I ever had a problem. He said, I have, any person I've ever cured, if I have to cure them emotionally, if they have something emotional, generally speaking, unless it was a trauma, it's something emotional that happened to them 5 to 10 years prior, and it got all of their hormones all messed up like we were talking about, and it was a cascade effect. He said, I have to find out what that trauma was or they won't heal. And he said, there was one woman who had this horrific event. I won't tell you about it, but he said, I couldn't get her to break through, and she finally broke through, and her cancer just dissolved, just practically overnight, her breast cancer. So, like you said, it's very important to get to the emotional, spiritual side of it. And all the people that went through alternative cancer therapies, they all said it was just this amazing spiritual journey. They said, even if, you know, in the end I don't make it, it's just been such an amazing journey. I heard that over and over and over, and the power of prayer, and it's really inspiring.
As illness can be, one chooses to use it as a path for awakening.
Mm-hmm.
So, Megan, we're getting close to the end, and I want you to really let people know where they can get your documentary. You know, your documentary is a teaching tool, and it's a really important documentary, and it's something that should be shown, you know, everywhere. Women should get it and have groups of friends come by and show it, you know, in schools, and, you know, it just needs to really go far and wide. So how can people get hold of your documentary to watch it if they want to purchase it? Tell us more about how to do that.
Okay, thank you. So my distributor, we have a website called Boobs, B-O-O-B-S, doc, as in documentary, doc.com. So boobsdoc.com. That's where you can, you know, find out information on how to buy the film or stream the film, or if you want to get a group of people together, and I'm happy to, you know, zoom in and talk to people after the screening or whatever. I'm happy to do that free of charge. I'm just trying to promote this thing and get it out to people. Unfortunately, it hit right during the pandemic, so, you know, it's been hard. We have had no theater production of it at all. Also, I have learned so much more since I made the film, because I've been researching so much, that I decided to turn this into a book. So I'm about a third of the way through writing a book. It's going to be, I suppose, called The Same Thing. But be looking for that. You can also find my Facebook page and my blog page, which will keep you up to speed with what I'm doing as part of the activism, trying to get things changed. I used to lobby Congress for 12 years, so I hope to do something on the Hill at some point. But my blog is, I send out two blogs a week. It's called blogonboobs.com, B-L-O-G, on boobs. BOOBS.com. And then also my book will be coming out whenever I can get it done. So thank you.
Oh, great. Well, I'll you know, put that in our show notes here, that blog on boobs.com and boobsdoc.com for anybody who wants to purchase it, download it. You know, I would imagine you can share this, get a group online together and just activate the movie through the Zoom, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've done that too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so it gives people opportunities to show this documentary and to share it, which really is inspiring me with some ideas as well. So, this has been a great conversation. We only have a minute or so left. Any last words you want to share, Megan?
Do your research. There's a lot of information in the film. I think you mentioned also to get a thermogram. I think you mentioned this, breastthermography.com. That's actually got a good, there's a button called Find a Center under there. Then that's the interpreter. Dr. Amalu is the interpreter for my results. But just take care of yourselves and just know what you're, do some research before you go in and talk to your doctor about a breast cancer screening and try and enlighten them as well.
Yes, good luck.
Yeah.
Do the best you can. Megan, I just want to thank you for the immense amount of hard work and dedication that it took to put this documentary together, and money, to travel over the world. It's a real labor of love, and I trust you'll be rewarded and compensated for your efforts. But, on behalf of the women of the world, thank you for this passion you have to bring truth and healing to the world and to the women of the world. It's so needed now. So I just want to let you know how much I appreciate your dedication and your commitment to this cause. And I know everyone listening is probably feeling the same way. So thank you for all that you do and will continue to do out in the world for all of us.
Thank you. And thank you for all your hard work also. Appreciate it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you're so welcome. And thanks for being here. We've been having this conversation with Megan Smith. She's the writer, director, and producer of Boobs, The War on Women's Breasts. Go download it, purchase it. You can watch it online. It's called Boobs. Go to boobsdoc.com, boobsdoc.com. Get her blog on Blog on Boobs. Is it Blog on Boob or Boobs? Boobs?
Plural. Plural.
Yes, Blog on Boobs.com. And if you want to know about thermography, check out the breastthermographycenter.com. Megan, thanks so much again for being with us. It's been so inspirational.
Thank you.
And take care. And to all of you listening, thank you for joining me here on What Women Must Know. And until next time, may you always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.